The Canucks Army Podcast with Thomas Drance and some other guy. On today's program, from NBC's Pro Hockey Talk, Jason Brough and Mike Halford. Now, here's your host, Thomas Drance.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of the relaunched Canucks Army Podcast. I'm sitting here in my apartment in snowy Toronto with producer Josh. How are you doing today, Josh?
Very well. Very well, Tom. Yourself?
I'm very well. I'm excited for a busy slate of Thanksgiving sports. There are two whole NHL games, two NFL games, and nothing else.
That's right.
There's nothing else.
Well, there's junior hockey.
There's junior hockey. Yes, there's Erie versus Guelph. Erie just acquired Canucks prospect Brendan Gaunce, so we're really excited about
it. That's
right. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, something.
Something else on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I was looking into the drive to Erie. It's 3.5 hours away. Mm-hmm. They play in Mississauga on Friday, but I'm, of course, going to be in the Score newsroom, so I'll be unable to cover that. So I'm going to have to get myself down to Erie in January.
Maybe we'll have to do a road trip.
Yeah, a road trip. You interested in going to Cleveland? I hear it rocks.
Yes, I hear that as well. The mistake by the lake.
Yeah.
I'd love to go.
Yeah, I mean, we can see Kyrie Irving at least.
That's right. You know? Yeah, and the Browns.
A basketball game and an Otters game. Yeah, I mean, no. let's not put Connor McDavid and Kyrie Irving in the same sentence as Brandon Whedon. I just can't do it. That's exciting. And I'm going to totally try and watch the Erie game in the Score newsroom tonight. And we'll see how that goes over.
We will. We'll tell you next week how it went over.
Yeah. Now, you know, for all our listeners who don't know, Josh and I both work at the Score. I just figure before we get into other stuff, I'll quickly promote what we do, because I don't know that a lot of people are aware of it. If you have the Score app and you check out, say, your NHL scores on any given night, if you go to news, that's sort of where I live now, and you'll be able to read a whole bunch of news from around the league, including funny GIFs and other great stuff. My colleagues Ian, Katie, and Josh also do fantastic work. Kyle, too. Those guys are sort of the principal NHL stack people. And check it out for NFL and NBA, too. There's a lot of great content there and totally worth your time. So, and if you haven't downloaded the Score app,
what's wrong with you?
Yeah. But even if you have it, check out the news portion, because I don't know that a lot of people realize just how heavily we've invested in the content there. But there's some great stuff.
There sure is, yeah. And it was actually interesting. I don't know if you were following along on Twitter a few days ago, but Will Leitch, I'm not sure if I'm saying the name right, the co-creator of Deadspin, he's with Sports Unearthed now. He tweeted out, "Oh, I'm so disappointed with the new ESPN update." The new ESPN app, and some people at the Score got back to him and said, you should try the Score app. You know, we just upgraded. We have this news team now.
And now he's our number one fan.
And exactly, yeah. And he had some good things to say about it after trying it out a little. And the one misconception, like you said, that a lot of people have is that it's just scores because people associate it with the Score and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, we were part of this kind of revolution there of like now they have this news team of 20 or 30 people that they didn't have before churning out news all the time. And yeah, it's not just a Score offering anymore. Now we actually can provide context and write stories and stuff. So there's a lot more there.
Well, it's really cool too. You get on the subway nowadays and everyone's in their phone or in their tablet, right? No one's reading a newspaper. Mm-hmm. And, this essentially it's like your sports page, but it's a button on your tablet or your phone.
Yeah, totally.
And sort of that's how I think about it. But it's an incredibly sophisticated delivery model for sports content, and the content itself is really good. Mm-hmm. I think. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
So, I just figured we'd take a minute to talk about that. We have this podcast.
Shameless self-promotion.
Well, yeah, a little shameless self-promotion. And, fact is, we work hard. We work hard and do good stuff. So let's try and point people to it.
Yeah.
Few hundred listeners here will... We'll hopefully convert some of them into users. But seriously, I love the product. I literally follow fantasy basketball. I follow it through my phone, and I try to watch as little of my own players play in fantasy because I overreact to them sucking. And then I'll, drop someone really good. So I almost entirely experience the NBA season through a mobile app now, which is, probably probably not healthy.
That's interesting.
Yeah, something. So the big news in the hockey world this week had nothing to do with hockey. There was the Canadian rights broadcast deal, a $5.2 billion agreement with Rogers Sportsnet to control NHL's broadcast rights across its seven channels, as well as, sort of have editorial control over Hockey Night in Canada, which will continue to exist in a sort of bastardized form that doesn't bring any revenue to the CBC. Inventory will be managed by Rogers. Mm-hmm. Now there's reports surfacing that one of the reasons TSN, who were shut out of the hockey rights deal and will essentially only carry Winnipeg Jets regional broadcasts next season,
right.
Suggestions that TSN approached the negotiations with an attitude of arrogance. That's what David Schultz in the Globe and Mail is reporting today, that their CEO, the BCE CEO, was not involved in negotiations, where on the other hand, the Rogers CEO,
Nadir Mohammed,
and Scott Moore and such, they were heavily involved.
Yeah, Pelly as well, yeah.
Pelly, yeah. So that's a pretty interesting nugget, I think, in sort of explaining how, this was about more than money for the NHL. This was about showing Bettman some due respect. And there was some stuff about Ron McLean.
Yeah, I had read some, I'm trying to remember where I saw this, but someone reported that apparently the NHL was not too thrilled with the way that CBC, or the way that the Ron McLean and Gary Bettman interviews on Hockey Night in Canada, which I'm sure if you're a Canadian hockey fan, you're quite familiar with. I guess they weren't too thrilled with how the league was perceived after that, and how Bettman sort of came off after doing a lot of those interviews, which he tended to sort of get really defensive. And Ron McLean would ask very real, solid questions, addressing real issues that, sometimes the league doesn't want to answer. And I can understand why he would try to skirt around that. But it always made for great television, and I loved those segments as a viewer and, somebody in the media. But I can see why the league was a little, But if I don't think that was a reason why CBC was sort of going to get hard done by in this deal, regardless of whether it was TSN or Rogers, Bell or Rogers, that ended up with the package. So I think that's the thing that not a lot of people are talking about, actually, is from the CBC angle. Everyone's saying, I got a text from, I know a guy who works at TSN, and he said it's like a funeral over here on the day, mm-hmm. After that morning. At CBC, Dave Bedini, actually, when I tweeted that out, got back to me right away and said, I got the same message from somebody at CBC. It's a similar environment over there. And, they're locked into this for four more years, and that's great. But what happens after that?
Yeah, Hockey Night in Canada is slowly going to be molded into a Rogers property. Sort of already has the rights to use their branding. They're already going to have editorial control over it.
That's a big thing, too, and you hit on that a second ago. CBC will not have they won't get any revenue from the games themselves. They're not making any money off them, and they don't get any, like you said, any editorial say, and they don't get to choose what games they are. Like, it just seems like they're a pawn in this whole thing, and it's really sad for for people I know. I just happen to know who work there, but just that company in general, and there are a lot of people there who do great work. And what are they going to do after 4 years? Does Elliot go to Rogers?
I think that's part of this, is a backdoor way of Sportsnet acquiring the best analyst not currently employed by TSN.
There are even some TSN people who you have to wonder what their future is too.
The Winnipeg Jets regional broadcast is just going to be stacked.
Yeah.
It's going to be like Darren Dreger from Portage in Maine reporting on Evander Kane's injury status.
That is going to be a Gemini winning.
We will know every time Blake Wheeler sneezes, thanks to TSN.
I should hope so.
Yeah, it's going to be It's going to be something. It's a changing landscape. There's a lot to like about it. Like, I personally welcome our new Rogers overlords with open arms. I'm excited about no regional blackouts.
I should also clarify at this point that I happen to work for a Rogers station for 5 years.
And Rogers is still a part owner in the Score, right? They're a 10% investor or something.
Right, that's true. Okay. So we are both a little entrenched in the situation. And I know people at all the different companies that were affected by this deal. So it's impossible for both of us not to be a little biased or a little... we're all affected here. But
But that's why I'm welcoming our new Rogers Overlords with open arms. I mean, this is that what goes to the meat of it. Clearly, if you're going to work in hockey media going forward, sports media in Canada, period, maybe, eventually you're going to work for Rogers.
That's true.
It looks like we're trending in that direction. Yeah. And everyone else is going to be a scrappy upstart. And first of all, I'm excited to see what that does to TSN's coverage. I mean, they're out of bed with the league now, so they can sort of be a little bit more edgy.
That's true.
I mean, they can afford to do that. Like, they can do what blogs, you know, like what really good blogs do.
And it'll be interesting to see. Do they
pull no punches?
Right. Will they hire bloggers that have like a strong voice now because they're not afraid to piss off the league anymore?
Interesting. And will TSN.ca has sort of lagged behind the other sites in terms of accessibility of content and layout. I mean, does TSN invest more heavily in digital now? You know, maybe. Do they? There's speculation that they might look into, that Bell might look into a push to bring the Expos back to Montreal so that they can have some broadcast rights for a professional sports team. WWE, I mean, what does TSN do? And, you know, you probably don't go into a negotiation like this without having a couple backup plans, I'd assume.
Yeah, no, I'm sure, and I'm sure both all the companies involved in this probably had sort of contingency plans in case things didn't work out. So I'm sure they know what their next moves are going to be, or at least they have ideas of what they want to do next. I have no idea what those are, but yeah, it should be really interesting to see where they go from here, and yeah, how their product changes from here. Like you said, the website. What the reporters do, whether they jump ship or they stay. I know for a fact, and talking to someone with knowledge of the situation, that's all I'll say. I sound like a real reporter now.
Yeah.
Bob McKenzie has a 10-year deal with TSN. Ooh. I can't remember when he signed that. Maybe somebody can look that up. But he is locked in with TSN, and it's his, quote, retirement contract, unquote.
Right.
So essentially he's, and you saw from his tweets after he broke this whole news, that he's like committed to TSN and he's not going anywhere and he still believes in their coverage and all this. So you're not going to see Bob McKenzie on Sportsnet. You're not going to see him on Hockey Night in Canada. So, you know, good for him for sticking it out. On the other hand, you know, there could be other guys who aren't locked in who might, we might see leave.
You know, we've seen in other fields, like in ESPN, Adam Schefter has the best football information, even though ESPN has meager access to NFL rights in the grand scheme of things. They play a game a week, right?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So they play one game a week.
But they are
which they have their foot in the door, but, like, they're the name for NFL coverage. You look at the NBA. No one messes with Adrian Wojnarowski. Like, that guy is the best reporter any sport.
And Yahoo doesn't have any rights to games.
Yahoo is an online property, but Woj knows what Kobe ate for breakfast, so he's got the best reporting. I think Bob McKenzie at TSN can be a similar thing. Like, at the end of the day, having rights and getting sort of the glad hand access is one thing, but actually knowing people and actually having people be willing to be open with you, you can't fabricate that, and you can't buy those rights. You have to work for it.
That's
and
right.
McKenzie has that.
He has all the sources. Yeah. He's got all the acumen.
That's not going away.
No, he's still going to be the same reporter, and he's not going to have less. He's not going to be cut off, really, in any way. You know, the benefit to having rights is obviously he gets to be on those intermission segments and insider trading, and, you know, he gets more exposure on TV and everything, but I mean, they can still put him on SportsCenter every night, and he can still write online columns, and he's on Twitter, and he's got, you know, a gazillion followers on there. So, I mean, he's still going to break news, just like, and I don't think his role is going to change.
No, he's still going to be the godfather of hockey reporting.
Yeah, but what about guys like Duffy and all their analysts and the panelists and stuff? I mean, those guys have decisions to make, so we'll see.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting, and, you know, I think we've swamped people with enough sports media nerdery for today.
I like talking about this.
Oh, me too. Me too. But yeah, well, we love talking about this because it's our life. But for our listeners, sorry. we've got Jason Brough and Mike Halford up next. We'll be talking about the Canucks, of course, and hockey for the next 40 minutes, 35 minutes.
Yeah.
So stay tuned, enjoy that, and check back with us next week. We'll have another great show for you.
Yep, absolutely.
Cheers.
Joining us now is Mike Halford and Jason Brough of Pro Hockey Talk, NBC's hockey blog, formerly the Curtain Bloggers. So we're glad to have them both here together. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing real well. Happy to be here. Yep, things are good. Things are good.
And I assume you want to wish a happy Thanksgiving to all the New Yorkers reading your blog in the cab.
Yeah, enjoy Thursday. Enjoy what we know is Thursday, New York.
I don't know that we have any New York listeners, so that was probably a waste of my time. All right, so let's get to the game tonight. Let's quickly touch on that. It's a Heritage Classic preview, so how excited are you?
I'm actually really curious to see how the Canucks come out of the gate against the Sens because, honestly, of all the tough losses the Canucks have had this season, and I think there have been almost all of them, the loss to the Kings was just a killer. Mike and I were at the game. We were sitting in the seats with Joe fans, and I'm telling you, I've been to most of the games this season, and that one, the fans really wanted to win, and I think the Canucks really wanted to win that one too, and you could really sense the frustration when the Kings scored in overtime. People just basically just leapt out of their seats and left. Because they were just really upset. That was a really good game. There was a lot of emotion in it. I think people were impressed with the way the Canucks stood up to the Kings, and they probably deserved to win that game. And that they couldn't hold on, and it was just a couple of mistakes that cost them. I'm really curious to see how Tortorella convinces them to keep going with the system, to keep doing what they're doing despite the lack of results they're getting.
Yeah, I would say two things. One, I'd be really curious to see what the reaction is going to be from Bieksa and Hedler after their two fairly egregious screw-ups basically cost the Canucks that win. The other thing I'm interested to see is how they'll be able to get after Craig Anderson, who as far as I can tell, has a pretty tenuous grasp of the quote-unquote number one job in Ottawa, as I think Robin Lehner is about ready to take it. So I'd be really interested to see if they can get after him. Tim Anderson has not been very good this year. Flip side, of course, is the Canucks aren't exactly an offensive juggernaut at the moment.
Yeah, so, you know, are these the two most disappointing teams in Canada so far?
Well,
Edmonton's
probably the most disappointing.
Yeah, but don't you need
the Jets are disappointing too? I honestly don't think the Sens are that disappointing. I think the Sens are overachieved to a dramatic degree last season
and the year before.
I definitely don't think that Sens are the most disappointing, and I don't know if you can call the Canucks the most disappointing team because they have. It's not like they played badly. I think, you know, Tom, I know you think if they keep doing what they're doing, their luck's going to change. I'm not so convinced of that because I think they need some finishers, and I don't know if they've got the finishers. You know, I watched a lot of the Leafs this year, and I know you have too, and I think the Leafs are a fascinating story because they're kind of the anti-Canucks, mm-hmm. Or they have been. You know, they're getting outshot all the time, but they're coming away with wins. I think they're ahead of the Canucks in the standings, but I look at that Toronto team and I see finishers. I see Phil Kessel, James Van Riemsdyk, Leupel. I see guys that can put the puck in the net. I don't see that on the Canucks. I see guys like Chris Higgins that work their butts off, but I don't know if they can finish chances. I see guys like David Booth, who finally had some chances against the Kings, and he's not finishing. I see Daniel Sedin, and I question his ability to finish, despite the fact that those guys have scored in the past. I don't know if they're creating the type of chances that are so easily finished. I think it's a really good debate. I think it's really interesting, and I really have no idea how it's going. But, Tom, would you disagree with me that the Leafs have more finishers than the Canucks?
No, I don't think I would. The thing with the Leafs is that on the wings, right? And, I mean, it's not a coincidence that the players you addressed were all wingers, right? Higgins, yep. Booth, Cassian, Hansen, Daniel Sedin, and Burrows too. Those guys are all underachieving offensively to start the season. The Leafs are loaded on the wings in terms of Clarkson, even, who's not producing.
Yeah.
But JVR, he's more in the Canucks mold. Kuhlman and Clarkson are more in the Canucks mold. But they've got Kessel, they've got Raymond, who was like built for the Eastern Conference to play off the rush. They've got JVR, who's, you know, a thoroughbred. And, you know, they are ahead of the Canucks in the standings by a point. But when those teams came together and played each other, right? I mean, Vancouver's in a class above because they can control the puck at 5-on-5 in a way Toronto is just completely incapable of doing. And
no, I'm not suggesting the Leafs are deservedly standing. I mean, I was not shocked whatsoever that they blew that lead to the Penguins the other night, just because of the way they play. What I'm saying is that I'm not sure you can judge those teams simply by, you know, their puck possession, because I think the Leafs could probably get away with a little less puck possession because of the finishers that they have. And I think we also have to talk about the goaltending. I was having a great debate with some of the guys on my men's league team the other day talking about Luongo. And I said, you know, Luongo has been, I think you can say he's been good, but I don't think he's, but I fully agree with John Tortorella when he says that, hey, you know what? Louis has got to bail us out sometimes when we have those breakdowns. Now, Luongo made a fantastic save. I think it was off Kopitar.
Yes.
Off, against the Kings you know, I had a buddy on my team tweet at me as like, "Hey, Bruff, did you see that save Louis made?" And I was gonna reply to him, and then was it Richard scored on him?
Yep.
Right. And I think that was a save that Luongo could have made. Was it easy? No. It was bang bang right in front of the net, and it was a bad play by Edler, and he was wide open. But it was another goal that kind of trickled through Luongo. And it was one of those saves where you go, you know what? Yeah, I mean, it was a goal, and it wasn't a horrible goal that Luongo let in, but is it the type of goal that maybe Bernier or shot that Bernier and Reimer have been saving for the Leafs?
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think it is.
I think it's a good debate with Luongo. I don't see Luongo right now as one of the elite goalies in the NHL. And I haven't seen him as one of the elite goalies in the NHL for a couple of seasons. And I think the Canucks need him to be an elite goalie if they want to do anything, or first of all, make the playoffs, and then do anything in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, too, is Luongo would make that save in years past, right? I mean, those are the saves that he would make. Luongo's save percentage at even strength is like 912 right now, which is, you know, that's not good. I mean, it's not a central reason for the Canucks losing at the moment, but yeah. it's one of the reasons. And you know, I thought Tortorella hit the nail on the head, as you said. But comparing Luongo to Scrivens, the guy he was almost traded for at the deadline last year, that seemed a little bit unaware. You know, I Luongo would unfollow me for something like that. So,
I think the Kings are an interesting team because they were winning games earlier in the season, almost in spite of Jonathan Quick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Quick wasn't playing very well, but he, you know, I think he's got a little bit more. People give him a little more margin for error because he had that great Stanley Cup run, and he won the cup, and he was brilliant in that. But I do think focusing on the Canucks, I think Luongo's got to be a little bit better. He's been good, yes, and he's made some great saves, and yes. Some of the chances that the Canucks give up because they play that aggressive pinching style and they give up these odd man rushes, yes, I think maybe he's faced some tougher shots. But, you know, I mean, he's supposed to be an all-star. He's supposed to be one of the best in the game. He might be Canada's goalie at the Olympics. Let's hold the Luongo to the same standard that we used to hold him to in Vancouver, because people don't hold him to that anymore. They say he's been good. And let's not hurt his feelings because he's upset and he's been through a rough time. But, you know, like, come on. If you think he's a good goalie, then hold him to a higher standard.
I think that's fair. I'm actually surprised by the kid gloves Luongo is dealt with these days. It definitely wasn't like this 24 months ago.
Well,
Well, I think part of it is I don't think anyone really knows how to react to the situation because it's so, like, it's beyond unprecedented what's happened there. And I think the other, the flip side of it is that, I mean, when's the last time that Luongo hasn't had a legit challenger for playing time or even a challenge to that number one job? I mean, it's been about, you know, 2-3 years at the least, maybe even further, depending on what time Corey Schneider sort of came about as a legit, you know, 1-1A option. And I, you know, the Canucks made their bet in a lot of ways with the team that you're seeing right now, which is 5 points out of a playoff spot already, and that's a wild card spot to Minnesota. I mean, that this is a team that's going to have to grind and dance for its dinner. I think a lot of the things about why people are having such a hard time figuring out what's quote unquote wrong with the Canucks or what the issue is, I think it's because even though the parts still look the same, this is really a fundamentally different team than you've seen in years past, and that they're not going to cakewalk their division. They're not going to be a top three team in the West. They've got a new head coach who's still trying to implement his style. They've got the same goalie in Luongo in name only, really, because I don't think he's anywhere near the goalie he used to be. I think we've kind of established that. He's a good goalie. He's not a great goalie anymore. And he's basically what you're seeing is what you're getting, and there's no option behind him, and all that drama is behind him. So there's almost, you know, I don't know what you say other than he's got to be better, which is what Jason said. Like, I think he's got to be a little bit better. That's literally all you can say about him at this point, because there's no, you're not going to play Lack any more than you've already played him. You're going to make Luongo your workhorse, and you kind of have to live and die with him. And I think it was funny at the beginning of the year when people were saying, oh, you know, Tortorella is playing the Sedins with Kessler too much, and it's too top heavy. And Tortorella's response was, well, you know what? We're not a shoe-in to make the playoffs here. We've got to win as many games as we can and secure as many points as we can while we can, because we're in a dogfight. And you look, I'm still waiting for one of these or two of these teams in the West to drop off, but I don't see Chicago doing it. I don't see St. Louis doing it. I can see Colorado coming back to earth. I think San Jose is going to be a very good team for the year. Anaheim's a 50-50 with me. They could come back to earth. I think LA is always going to be there. I don't know what to expect from Phoenix and Minnesota, but as it stands right now, they're 5 points clear of the Canucks, and Phoenix has a game in hand. And yeah, you already have to start talking about all of that. So I think, you know, readjusting the focus is the Canucks as a team that need to battle to get into the playoffs, which is totally fine, because once you get into the dance, anything can happen. But that's kind of where they're at.
Hey, here's a question I got for you, Tommy. I'm going to put you on the spot today. I know you're supposed to be interviewing us.
All good.
Okay, if you're Mike Gillis. Mm-hmm. And Aquilini comes down to you after the season that the Canucks have missed the playoffs, and Luongo has played pretty much the same as he's played right now. Maybe even a bit worse. And he goes, Mike, we're giving you, if you want to buy out Luongo with a compliance buyout, you can do it. We're going to give you the money. Would you do it?
In a heartbeat.
In
a heartbeat. It has so little, for me, it has so little to do with performance and so much to do with the fact that term on a goaltender, because I sort of see goaltenders as fungible assets who are pretty tough to predict. You know, if you can get out from a long term, like, I hate the Jonathan Quick contract. I hate the Corey Crawford contract. There is next to no goaltender contract that I think is worthwhile. And I think those two are particularly heinous. Like, Luongo has the eighth.
But don't you think that, I mean, I bet if you asked a lot of people, they go, are you crazy? No, then what would we have? We'd have nothing.
Right.
I got to jump in. I think Quick's contract is bad, but I think putting Quick and Crawford in the same conversation is, like, mental. I don't think that's anywhere near this. I understand that Quick's numbers dip in the regular season, but in the last two playoffs, and this isn't even just from a statistical perspective. This is from watching the two series very closely. He's lights out in the playoffs. So that's really what you're paying the guy for. Is to get your team into the playoffs, do whatever you got to do in the regular season, and then win a Stanley Cup. I mean, that's the math on this one, about as simple as it can be. It's too long. It's 10 years. It's way too long. It's probably way too much money. But I'm talking about two extraordinarily strong, you know, playoff appearances back-to-back, where the Kings probably had no business getting past the Blues last year, and then didn't score really any goals against the Sharks and still beat them in seven, and Quick stood on his head. I mean, that's why you pay that guy that kind of money. Crawford, to me, is an entirely different ballgame. And then Luongo is an entirely different ballgame. But I think to bring it back to Jason's point, the question is, if you do a buyout like that, It's what's your plan? Like, you have to have an option in reserve. And I don't know what that option is, because I don't know if the goaltending market is fluid enough where you can just plug a guy in and be like, all right, we're going to keep competing.
Well, I think, honestly, I think maybe it could be Lack. I mean, I'm looking at Luongo's contract right now on CapGeek, and I mean, you know, this summer would be the last chance they have. The last chance they have to get out from under that, because then there are the compliance bio window is over. This guy is signed till 2022 with a cap hit of $5.3 million. Yeah, they can probably say, oh, he's injured, and put him on LTIR for the last two seasons. But this will be the last chance that they can get out from under that contract. That's a long time until 2022. So I'm kind of with Tom on that. Matt, absolutely. I'd use it. And I'm a bit surprised that it's not discussed a little bit more. Maybe some people think it's just a non-issue. And then
here's the thing: if you go that route, what do you say to a group of veterans, including the Sedins, who just locked in for four more years in the hopes of trying to win? What do you say? You say, well, we're going to throw the keys to the bug-eyed Swedish kid and that? Like, that's nuts to me, right? I mean, there's a lot of guys who are saying he could be a good goalie, but he certainly hasn't proven it in any way. You would have to have a plan B in place. I'm not saying that buying Luongo is a bad idea by any stretch, but it's always, whenever these conversations come up, it's like, fire the coach, trade all the players, buy all the goalies. You need to have a real sort of solid plan B or something to go to. And I've looked at it a million times up and down, and I'm like, what do you do? Do you make the play for Ryan Miller because he's a free agent? Is that your solution? And if it is, you're going to have to pony up pretty big bucks for him, I would imagine. Maybe not over the same amount of term, but it's still going to be a big investment. I mean, I talked about making their beds earlier in the conversation. It's like Gillis made his bed with his deal. Like, you have to lie in it eventually. You know what I mean? You don't get a get-out-of-jail-free card unless – you know, somehow you're able to, I guess Paul Holmgren did, because he was able to flip out a bunch of different really bad deals. But eventually you have to lie in the bed, and that's exactly what this is. Gillis had opportunities to ship Luongo out, and now he may be faced with an opportunity to buy him out. But I honestly think that he might just go down with the ship on this one and be like, you know what, this is our deal, this is our guy, and this is the guy we go with. I don't agree with it, but I think that's what it could end up being.
Let me ask you this, though. If Aquilini had given the funds to buy him out, would he have traded Schneider? I don't think there's any way. I think he would have said, we're buying you out.
Yeah, I don't think the Luongo buyout is a thing that is really seriously discussed. There's no way that they're going to do it, because it's just too much money. And obviously, I mean, they put Keith Ballard on waivers.
Not too much money. It's not, because if Golov could be bought out and McAvoy could be bought out, anyone could be bought out.
No, but I think it's
I think if Aquilini, I mean, if Gillis went to Aquilini and said, I want to buy out Luongo, and Aquilini said, no, I'm not paying that, I think fans have sort of a right to be like, hey, man, you know what? We spend a lot of money on tickets. And, you know, you look at Tampa Bay, and they buy out Vinny, and as Mike mentioned, Philly bought out Brzgalov, and you know, I think fans would have a bit of a beef if the Canucks are supposed to be this financial heavyweight that doesn't mind throwing its wallet around to win games. So anyway, I think we probably...
Well, okay, one final thing, though, just so everyone listening to this understands that the conversations, there's two different conversations. There's Luongo the goalie and there's Luongo the contract, right? And they don't always overlap. Yeah. But in this conversation, it's just about makes too much money unless he's, like, winning the Hart Trophy and the Vezina every year.
And, well, I think it makes too much money, and the fact that he's 34 years old, and he's got 8 years left on his deal, and he can't retire because of the CBA rules that are gonna hurt the Canucks. I think it's a conversation. Yeah, that's entirely about the contract.
I just have a couple things to quickly add on what you guys have been riffing on. First of all, is that Jonas Hiller and James Reimer are UFAs this summer. So it's not like they'd be totally without options on the market
were they to buy out Luongo. A second thing is the Canucks didn't buy out Keith Ballard till the very last day of the compliance buyout. And if there was one slam dunk buyout league-wide, it was Keith Ballard. The day before they bought him out, they put him on waivers. Not the unconditional waivers that you need the guy to pass through to buy him out, but they were actually like, well, let's give it a shot. I think this is a team that is ownership's willing to spend. They've taken on liabilities in order to acquire players. I think there's something about the buyout that messes with their principled view of the way they run business. I think they're extremely hesitant to do it, and that's why I think they won't buy out Luongo. One last thing that I want to say. Corey Crawford has played 6,601 minutes at even strength over the past four seasons with a .923 save percentage. Jonathan Quick has played 10,759 minutes with a .923 save percentage. They both have a Stanley Cup. They're both criticized for having a slow glove hand. They both play behind dominant teams. I think they're very comparable pieces.
I don't see it.
So, Thanksgiving themed. When it comes to this version of the Canucks, like, what are you enjoying or thankful for that's different from in years past?
I want to talk more about that Kings game because I was really encouraged by it, and it was actually, I can't remember a game that I've been to that I'd enjoyed that much and that I'd been into that much. And, Mike and I, half the time when we're at Canucks games lately, it's been, we spend the whole time talking about other stuff while the game is just kind of going on. That third period, I was just totally into it. I loved the way they stuck up for Henrik Sedin. Tommy, you may disagree with me on that sort of stuff about if people take liberty, then you don't go after the guy and risk a power play against you. I completely disagree. I think if a guy takes a run at your captain in the regular season, early in the regular season, you take care of him. You do something about it. And I loved that they did that. And right after they did that, they played some of their best hockey of the season. And they really took it to the Kings. And it's that kind of emotion that I loved seeing out of the Canucks. And that's why the loss was so hard and everyone was so upset when they lost, is because I think people were really behind the team and really hoping that they got it done because they played with such emotion. And they played like a team. They played like a team that cared about each other. So I think that was encouraging to see.
Positives for me, and I think it's been a nice reverse trend over the last years, is that the value guys that they brought in this year have been pretty, pretty impressive. I think number one for me is Stanton, who I think that was a keen bit of scouting on their behalf. Is that you could get a guy that has was buried in Chicago behind Mike Koska for some reason. I'm still not sure on that one, and able to find and plug and play him in your lineup. And I think he's been really good. I think the Santarelli and Richardson contracts for the amount that they paid and the amount of production that they're getting out of them have been really good. I think you talk about all the for lack of a better term, dead weight in money that Gillis has brought on over the last couple of years in Booth and in Ballard and in a couple other guys. And I think this was like probably some of his better work, really unheralded, and maybe it's not making a huge effect on the team, but these guys have all come in and played pretty well. And I go back to Stan. I think that's probably the best thing that they found really all year.
Yeah,
Stan. I'm not giving up on Booth, by the way.
Really?
I'm not.
Really? Because I gave up on him a year and a half ago.
I just gave up on him this season.
he played well in that LA game. He should have had a goal. I'm not giving up on him. I think he's legit. He has a valid excuse in the injury he had. And I think if he can get some of his burst back, which is admittedly a big if, I wouldn't give up on him. And I think the Canucks, I think he's a very key player. I mean, if he can get up to that second line and be an effective player, then things change a little bit. Am I 100% convinced he's going to do it? No, but I'm certainly not giving up on him. Let me put it this way. I've got more faith that Booth could be an effective second liner come playoff time than I do that Zach Cassian does. Can.
Ooh. You know, I don't think I disagree with that. I think if Booth can get back to his 11-12 homeless man's Glenn Anderson version of himself, you know, then
no, we're going with the homeless man's Glenn Anderson.
Yes. So we're going that's what I'm going with.
Full boxcar Glenn, that's a good name for him. I'm sorry, I got to disagree. A lot of what people say, oh, all they need is for Booth to get back to his form. I'm like, back to what form? Because every time I saw him when he was healthy, I was still like, this guy doesn't have a ton of hockey sense. And the thing that bothered me the most was that the idea of him playing with Kessler was supposed to work because they were both supposed to figure out, like, we're good power skaters. We're going to drive the net. And the other guy's going to read that, and he's going to try and crash it. But it never happened because I don't think Booth really understands how to play all that well. If there's a David Booth they want, it's the guy that was, you know, scoring 30 goals prior to the concussion for Mike Richards, which is now like 5 years ago. And asking a guy to turn back the clock 5 years is an awful lot. I just don't see it happening.
Booth used to be dynamite through the neutral zone, though, right? Like, he'd get the puck in the defensive end and just skate.
Very good skater, and his transition game
was super useful. And when you add Higgins, who's sort of an underrated playmaker, I mean, he's miscast there. You'd rather have a skill guy. But he can sort of distribute a bit. That line sort of worked really well. By the underlying numbers, I always thought the notion that Kessler and Booth didn't have chemistry was off. Like, I don't think they were... I don't think they, like, felt each other all that well. I don't think they, like... I don't think they had chemistry in that sort of more obvious sense. But I do think they had some in the sense that, you know, they could both skate downhill. They transitioned quickly. They dominated play. And they won a ton of puck battles. I mean, I think it resulted in a lot of sort of awkward offensive opportunities. But you know, I mean, fuck, I'd take those awkward offensive opportunities at this point from a second line. I mean, geez.
Yeah, if the Canucks could add one thing, what would you like to see them add?
You know, I mean, I think, first of all, I'm big on the Alex Steen train, and I was before the shooting percentage burst. You know, I think that guy's a killer two-way player despite his age. He's probably too expensive now. But he was
like the type of player, like a scoring winger.
Yeah, I think a scoring winger. I mean, you know, you look at Santorelli, and I mean, he's winning a ton of faceoffs. He looks to me like he can be your third line center. And you know, I went to London last weekend to see Bo Horvat, and that guy is the most polished 19-year-old I've ever seen. He won like 75% of his draws, just completely suffocated the best line in the Ontario Hockey League. I don't think you bring in a guy and pay him for more than a year to be your third line center with that guy coming up, because I think that guy's going to make the league soon. And so you know, I think Santorelli is your third line center, Kessler is your second line center. The thing you sort of look for, in my opinion, is that scoring winger. You just need a dynamic offensive player. You need someone who can punch up your power play. I mean, if they're going to go with four forwards on the power play, and I don't hate it because it gives you the Kessler to either Garrison Edler D-to-D one-timer pass, which I really like and I think can create a lot of disruption for the Canadiens to sort of work around. But you need a better forward than Burrows as the fourth forward there, because Burrows just can't score on the power play. So
yeah, no, I'd agree with you. I think, well, I'm focused on the power play too, and I'm thinking that they need to bring in some sort of power play specialist on the back end. I don't know who that is, but they're just I just don't see a defenseman that's really taking control of the power play. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to bring up Aronoff, but I think the Canucks miss him on the power play. And I don't know if Edler's done what it takes to be that power play quarterback. Garrison's got a big shot, but there's a reason he played really well with Brian Campbell, because Brian Campbell is the type of player I think that the Canucks power play could use. A good skating defenseman that can distribute the puck well. I'm not saying Brian Campbell.
I love Brian Campbell.
I'm saying a player like that, because you know, it's all well and good to have Henrik Steen kind of control the power play off the sideboards, but I think you need another guy that can make those those right decisions and get either whether it's Edler or Garrison for the big shot from the point.
I just keep hearing Michael Delzato. This is all I keep hearing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, everything Jason says reeks of Michael Delzato.
Delzato or Gardner, right? Those are the two.
I also think Gardner. I tweeted last night. I said, look, if Gardner's available, I think the Canucks should take a look and see what it would take. I don't know where he would. I don't know where he would kind of fit in. It's hard, but I mean, is he a power play quarterback? I mean, I know Delzato. Everyone talks about this guy being the power play quarterback. I haven't really been too impressed when I see him on the power play. Like, how many power play points did he have?
I think the guy that loves Delzato the most.
I think he's
Tortorella. So. Yeah, I think Tortorella loves him more than anyone else. And the Canucks and Leafs will never, ever, ever get together to make a trade for the remaining.
Yeah, that's true. I just love Gardner skating. I just love Gardner skating. And there's nothing on the Canucks blue line right now that comes close to the skating of Jake Gardner. Some guy tweeted, replied to me, and goes, really? Even Hamhuis? Like, damn Hamhuis.
Yeah,
like,
that's...
He's a good skater, but he's nowhere close to, like, where you'd be like, wow, that guy's a great skater.
Now,
is anyone on the Canucks a great skater? I mean, Kessler's a strong skater. Yannick Hansen's a good skater, but other than that...
On the back end, Bieksa and Edler, I guess, are the best. But you're right, they're not high-end skaters. They're not Duncan Keiths by any measure.
Tom Sestito,
yeah.
Very underrated skater. You can do it upright without bending his knees. How many guys can do that?
He might be the worst regular player in the NHL this year. Like, he's the first time the Canucks have had the worst regular NHL skater since they employed Ryan Johnson. So, you know, that's sort of interesting.
Rigel, wow, I forgot about Ryan Johnson entirely. His feet are probably still both broken.
Yeah. Poor guy.
I would forgive Sestito if he started winning fights convincingly, but I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. The power play, by the way, is the one thing, like, the Canucks at even strength, they're good, but, you know, they're not scoring a lot, and they're getting outscored with the score tied, which to me is a sign that you can't sort of take their overall numbers that seriously, because if they're always trying to catch up, and they have spent a lot of this season trying to catch up, then, you know, you don't really know how good they are. So I'm sort of not that confident about saying that the Canucks are as good as their underlying numbers suggest they are at even strength. On the power play, though, that's the area that I'm really convinced that this team will regress in a positive direction. They're second in the league in shot rate, and, you know, their shooting percentage right now is like 4 points lower than the lowest power play 5-on-4 shooting percentage recorded since the lockout. You know, I sort of am sensitive to the idea that they need more snipers or that they're taking too many shots from outside. But, like, this Canucks team is not the most offensively challenged team in the NHL in 7 years. I mean, there's no way.
No, but I think they need to create higher quality chances. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's almost like when you see Daniel Sedin shoot the puck now, you're like, how did this guy ever score? I mean, did he get 40 goals 1 year?
Yep, 41.
I mean, you're kind of like, okay, well, how many of those goals were just really good creative plays where you're getting the goalie moving laterally or maybe having, you know, Henrik sets you up with an open net? I'm not seeing them create those type of chances. I look at the Leafs power play and I'm like, man, they've got some dynamic players out there. And I just don't see that from the Canucks on the power play. I see a lot of passing on the outside, and then you set it up for Garrison to shoot it 10 feet wide, and then, you know, that's kind of what I'm seeing. I'm not seeing a lot of creativity. If you could figure out a statistical measure for predictability, I think that would probably be somewhat useful in this conversation. Because I think when you look at the Sedins on the power play, and, you know, it's I don't want to say that people have figured them out, but there are certain things that the Sedins do repeatedly on the power play that I think after enough video analysis and studying, if you watch them over and over and over again season after season, you know what the plays are going to be. And there's a lot of, I don't want to call them high-risk passes, but there's a lot of passes that rely on those two guys being the recipients because, you know, a lot of guys just can't handle what they're doing. So in a lot of sense, it's like, well, what are Daniel and Henrik doing? Let's
try and snuff that out. And then from there, it kind of goes, what are our other options? The second unit doesn't really ever do anything.
What are the other options? I think that's where Tommy's point about getting a good scoring winger.
Yeah.
Yeah, and or just people. I mean, I remember there was a Justin Bourne article a while ago where he sort of was talking about how players have to learn to play with the Sedins because you need to sort of find soft areas of the ice that you'd get yelled at by your coach for being in any other situation. But the Sedins will find you there, and you sort of have to unlearn how to play or learn how to play with them. And, like, more than missing Erhoff's speed on the back end or more than missing Sammy Salo's shot – or more than missing Mikael Samuelsson, who's, you know, not all that good. I think what those three guys had in common is that they had a way, they knew how to generate chances based on what the Twins do. And I don't know that guys like Garrison or Booth, I mean, sorry, I know that guys like Garrison, Booth, Cassian sort of haven't found that that's anything similar to that. Like, you know, Henrik Sedin passing from sort of the left wall to Sammy Salo for the D2D one-timer, right? You knew it. You knew it like a couple seconds before it happened. You knew it was coming, and you were like, yes, this is going to be great. They have nothing like that with Garrison. There's no sort of like setup or set play or anything where they sort of feed that shot in a way that seems productive or interesting. And so, you know, I'm sensitive to the fact that there's something going on there, whether or not it's just that the Canucks aren't as skilled as they've been in the past or if they need players like that. So I'm sensitive to that. Still, this power play is going to start to score, and I'd be surprised if they don't finish the league in the top half and maybe even the top 10 in power play conversion rate.
Well, I think it could be a bit of both. I think they've been definitely unlucky. I mean, there's just no question they've been unlucky. You look at just watching the Leafs. Some of the puck luck they get is just unbelievable. But it just hasn't happened for the Canucks. And maybe a couple years ago, the Canucks were the team that was getting a bit lucky. I don't know. I think it's probably a bit of both. But it's been frustrating so far this season watching that team because they've deserved better than they've received.
Yep. Yes, it has. All right. With that, I think I'll let you guys go. Thanks so much for chatting with us, and we'll have you on again.
All right, Tom.
The Canucks Army Podcast is filmed in front of a live studio audience.